I love cooking, so this generally contact with the food data, it was always exciting for me. And yeah, the wealth that all this data gives you, it's really amazing. So you start from numbers and then you end up with a result that is really significant for the Europeans' health.
Science on the Menu, a podcast by the European Food Safety Authority.
Hello and welcome to Science on the Menu. Today we're going to be talking about food consumption data. What we eat, how much we eat, and why it matters so much for public health and food safety. From shaping nutrition policies to chemical risk assessments, the data that we collect on food is behind many of the decisions that are made in the EU on food safety. And joining me today to discuss this topic, I'm very pleased to welcome one of our scientists at EFSA, leading scientist, in fact, in this area, Sophia Ioannidou. Hi, Sophia. Warm welcome to you. How are you today?
Very nice, thank you.
Okay. So we're receiving information from member states, from outside of Europe?
Pre-accession countries,
okay. About what people are eating, how much they're eating, this kind of thing. What are we tracking? Everything? Anything?
We are having data starting from infants, very small infants, from 3 months old until very elderly. But also we're covering special population groups, like, for example, pregnant women, lactating women, or even vegetarians.
And what kind of level of detail are you going into?
Very detailed. So we are actually looking into each single food the people are having in each single eating occasion. So, for example, for breakfast, whether they have a coffee or bread with butter and jam or orange juice or egg, whatever. So every nitty-gritty detail that they can provide, we are collecting it.
Collecting this, okay. Yeah. And why? I mean, why do we collect data on food consumption in the context of, you know, the work that we're doing here at EFSA?
Yeah, it's actually the base for the exposure assessments that we are performing, which is also part of the risk assessment process. So we have from the one side the concentration on chemicals or on nutrients, and from the other side the consumption. We put them together and then we're able to calculate how much the population is exposed to these chemicals or how much of this nutrient is taken in. So to understand whether there is a risk for the population or there is a deficiency, for example, for nutrients. For this kind of stuff.
We know that if you consume a certain chemical, for example, above a certain level, it could pose a risk. Then with the data that we have in this database, we're able to see which population groups in the EU are above that level, below that level, and so on.
Correct.
Okay. And
yes,
that allows us to then, if you like, finalize the risk assessment or do the characterization of risk.
Correct, yeah. Yes. And this goes into the opinions and then it's up to the commission then to decide whether, for example, they will modify the limits, the maximum limits for some chemicals, or I don't know, put in place some advice, for example.
So, I mean, you have a wealth of information and knowledge around what Europeans are eating. I mean, it's a very popular topic, food, in any country I think you go to. You know, every country has their own food traditions. So I want to explore this a little bit more with you. I had some questions in mind, so in the form of a very simple quiz, let's say. If I were to ask you, which country in the EU consumes the most meat, for example?
Okay, well, meat has different types of meat, of course. Okay, so I think that from what I remember from the data, it would be Ireland consuming most of the beef meat. Mm-hmm. But then it will come, for example, Cyprus consuming the most of pork or chicken meat.
Okay, Cyprus as an island, yeah. Maybe you might expect fish to be higher up on the...
They do. Okay. They have also high consumption in fish as well, yeah. But apparently they also consume a lot of pork and chicken meat.
Okay, interesting. And what are... So which countries are big fish consumers then?
There's all the Mediterranean, yeah. So Greece, Italy, Spain and Portugal. And this is for general fish. But then, for example, when talking about salmon, it would be Sweden. The leader.
Okay. So you could say, looking at your data, you could say general consumption of fish, southern Mediterranean,
yes.
Or yeah.
Yeah.
But then on a specific type of fish, you're able to single out a
Because
a
we have very, very detailed information there, all different kind of fishes.
Okay. What about cheese? Who eats the most cheese in the EU?
Top of my mind, I think it would be Finland and Estonia, the top consumers, let's say. Okay. But okay, it depends also there the type of our cheese, because we have many in our catalog that we use for classifying the food. So we have mozzarella, parmesan, we have brie, we have feta, we have halloumi, we have many different types.
Because obviously these cheeses are eaten all over the
Across
EU.
Across Europe, yes, of course.
Okay, so you're not just looking at where they're made, but rather, no. Yeah. Okay, let's try another one. Maybe on a stereotype. Yeah, we're going to test a food stereotype here. So what about, I don't know, Belgians and chocolate? This is a link that's often made in people's minds. So is it true that the Belgians, for example, eat the most chocolate in Europe?
They produce it, but apparently they don't eat it.
Ah, really?
It's Danish people that eat the most of the chocolate.
Okay, fine.
But they do have very good chocolate, Belgium.
Okay, and maybe one link to the country that we're in right now, which is Italy. So I think most people would assume that Italians eat the most pasta in the EU.
This is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Italians do eat a lot of pasta.
Yeah.
I think it's something like on average per day, something like 60 grams every day,
really?
Every single day.
Okay. Oh, you'd be good in a quiz situation, a general knowledge quiz on food. What are some of the, if you like, more peculiar or strange things that you're monitoring or collecting data on as far as food is concerned?
When the data are arriving, we are doing a kind of validation, no? In order to make sure that they look okay. So I remember that once when going through the data, we saw that a person, I don't know now from which country it was coming from, has reported 12 bananas in one single day and nothing else, only 12 bananas. I said, okay, this doesn't seem correct. We have a maximum limit like 3 bananas per day. Right. So it really came out as an outlier. So I said, okay, we go back to the country and we report that and we say, can you please confirm that this is the case? And they said, this is the case. That person consumed only 12 bananas and nothing else that day. So we kept the data as such.
Okay, so somewhere in your database is a person eating 12 bananas a day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, probably not recommended from a nutrition food safety point of view, I would say. Well, maybe tell us about the size of the database. How many different food categories are you tracking?
Well, we are having a classification system according to which we are asking countries to code the food. So we have a kind of harmonization and we understand what we're talking about. So we have many entries there, but now currently the database contains something like 2,500 different food items that has been reported to be consumed.
Okay.
And this is from around 250,000 EU citizens.
Okay, and that's not just food that's produced in the EU. No, it can be any food.
It can be also imported or brought from a trip or eaten in a restaurant or cooked at home.
Okay, so food from any part of the world that could be consumed in the diets of EU citizens is included in your database.
It is, yes.
Okay, we talked about specific food categories and so on. What happens if you take a look at the database from a more kind of global perspective? What does it tell you about, I don't know, society's relationship with food in general? Can you see trends over time, how we eat different things?
You can see, for example, as we said before in the quiz, different consumption patterns between the different countries. So where, for example, meat is being consumed mostly, olive oil, for example, that is being consumed mostly in the southern part of Europe as well, instead going up. You have butter and seed oil, for example.
Okay.
And then you can see also different, let's say, trends like the insertion of energy drinks in the diet or food supplements that are being consumed a lot nowadays. Or, for example, alternatives to meat.
Yeah.
So this you can see now.
Okay. So you would see that, as a rise over time on a particular food staff or food category.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. From the food that have been reported during the surveys, we can see these entries there and we can understand that this is moving towards that direction, for example.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, how do you get into food safety consumption data, Sophia? I mean, what's your background, or why is it, how do you end up doing this at EFSA?
Well, I'm a food chemist studied. I love cooking, so this generally contact with the food data, it was always exciting for me. And yeah, the wealth that all this data gives you, it's really amazing. So you start from numbers and then you end up with a result that is really significant for the Europeans' health.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that keeps me going, let's say.
I mean, is something like this done also at a global level? Or are there other organizations, I don't know, the WHO or the maintaining similar kind of databases? How do you bring everything together at an international?
Actually, we are collaborating with FAO and WHO.
Yeah.
And we are sharing that we have most of the data that we have in the comprehensive database. They are also part of the global database that FAO, for example, holds. And they also adopted the food classification system we have in place.
And why is that important? That's to make the
harmonization, okay. To bring harmonization and being able not to, for example, stand only on the original name of the food or the English translation, but have a code behind. Mm. So it gives you easily, let's say, the data are easily accessible and treated.
For anyone who's using it, yeah.
Exactly,
yeah,
okay. yes. So yeah, we are seeing, let's say, that these data are very important, not only in Europe, but across the globe. So they are collecting data from other areas of the world, Africa, yeah. America, Australia. Really? So there are many data there. And we have also given input from the work is done in Europe, to be, let's say, adopted by other countries outside Europe.
Sophia, we're coming to the end. Before we go, I just wanted to get a sense from you how you think, the work around food consumption data will or could develop in the future. I'm thinking, the emergence of new technologies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a kind of manual or laborious task collecting this information at the moment. No, it's really you have to have an interview with an individual to gather information like that. Is there a more efficient way of doing this, do you think, on the horizon?
Yeah, definitely it is, because it takes a lot of time. The classical way of having an interviewer visiting your house and then going through your diet the last day in detail, so it's quite cumbersome. We see now coming in the self-administered method, so for example, app in an application on your phone, mm-hmm. or visiting a website, signing in, and then putting all your data there. And in one meeting we had some years ago, we had a presentation about a wearable chip that it attached to your teeth, and in combination with the picture of the food, then this chip was able to, from the time that you were chewing, was able to track the quantity of the food you were consuming at that moment. So you had the picture from one side, and the information of the chip, and then they were going directly in the database.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the future. It's a wearable chip. I can't imagine we're all going to be wearing chips in our teeth, but who knows?
You never know.
Yeah. But then I guess you get a more detailed understanding of the amount rather than estimation.
It should be. But of course, this method needs to be validated and then tested in surveys. But yeah, we are heading towards that.
Great, Sophia, it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you very much. We'll leave you to get back to your important work. Thanks very much for joining us. We'd be very happy to see you again on our podcast for the next time. If you're interested in the work we're doing on food consumption data, please do check out our website. You can find a lot of information there, as well as the database itself. Keep us in your minds. You can follow us on our social media channels for more information about our next episode here on Science and the Menu. Thanks very much and goodbye.